Welcome back to Connections. You just heard State Senator Rich Funke, and now it's State Senator Joe Robach in studio, squeezing us in before the election. I know it's a busy calendar. Thanks for doing that.
It's good to have the opportunity, and it really is. I think that's a good place to be. There's a lot of good things going on, and there really is in Rochester. Just came from the opening of Magic Studios at RIT, which when I say state-of-the-art on digital film, gaming, R&D, every platform, they're really going to be, I think, not only nationally but internationally known. So in addition to drawing more students and being good for them, we already have some spinoff companies, even in the development stage. Who knows what could happen from that? But I think it'll be jobs, 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 and that certainly lifts all boats. So it's, what would I say, really? I think there's a lot of exciting things happening in downtown, around town, over at Eastman Business Park. But again, you know, with the good, there's always the challenges as well.
Well, so let's talk about that with Senator.
I wanted to set you up for that.
Well, that's very kind of you, Senator Joe Robach.
It's what I do.
Well, you know, you've served a number of terms in the New York State Senate now.
I have.
And running for re-election, I want to ask you, first of all, how you view the political climate. Rich Funke just said on this program that he hates politics, but he likes public service, that he hates how extreme the rhetoric has gotten. Is it extreme, or do you understand the frustration that some people have?
Well, I'm going to say a bunch of things. I understand frustration, but those are issues that come from people. I think what Rich is talking about is people who run for office and how the political parties can be both and how they flame the pollers. So I've always kind of, I think, made myself immune from that, because certainly, in all humility, you won't find anybody, unless they're running against you and then they are untruthful and lie because they want to win. I reach across the aisle. I'm out there every day. I think what has allowed me to be there as long as I have is I have a very, very different relationship with this entire community, white, black, Latino, young, old, urban, suburban. You know, I go to people's homes to help them fill out the HEAP form if they need heat, help them get their star rebate check if need be. And that's what I think Rich means, and I agree with that. I like doing the job part. I understand that there's a process, and I respect that greatly. But the political part that goes above and beyond that, I just stay out of that fray as much as I can. I'll go to that. It's like we just got applauded by RIT and everybody there, Dell Corporation, everybody else, for Joe Morelli and I and our delegation coming together, working with the governor, Regional Economic Development Council, public-private partnership to deliver resources, which I believe may be the acorn that might become an oak here for us in employment. It's amazing how much that sector generates. But you can't do that if you're uber political. I don't run because hiding behind a party. I run by what I do. Performance, not promise. Results, not rhetoric. And I can't tell other people what to do. But I'm very, very glad that I've done that. And I'm very much rewarded by listening to my mother, who said to be that way. And the best reward is not only electoral victory, but I like it when people say to me in the community, even, you know, the other day I'm walking through the library, there's regular folks saying, you know what, thank you for doing this and this and this. Thank you for not doing this and this and this too. So I hear what you're saying. I've never gotten caught up in it. Do I have the magic wand to make everybody try to get to the middle? I don't. And all kidding aside, part of my decision not to run on a national level and stay at the Senate is because I think I can have a bigger impact here, and I like that milieu and can control it better.
So you're never going to run for another office?
I don't know if I'll ever run for another office, but you know what? I didn't want to, at this time, not that I was afraid, I wanted to keep balance in the state. That was important to me, and first and foremost. But as a sidebar, I don't like either polar being so nasty at the federal level. And so I think at least regionally here, We've not operated that way, and the results have been good. And it's great when we can sit down with the county executive who's in one party, the mayor who's in another, Joe Morelli and I, Rich Funke, Harry Bronson, and really, and get and we've got things done. It's not that's not political. That's factual. And that's how I think government should be. And that's how I was taught when I was younger as well. So sometimes you can't control everything, but you can lead by example. And even though we all get frustrated a little bit, usually performance will prevail.
All right. So let me ask a little bit about the polar stuff. And in a moment, you can tell me if the question's fair or not.
Sure.
Because yesterday on this program, we were talking about the tragic events this past weekend in Pittsburgh. And one of our guests this weekend, Norm Ornstein, a longtime political commentator who's written books with Republicans, he's a Democrat, says that there is polarity on both sides, but it's not equal. And it's whipped up by this administration, and that rank and file Republicans, especially in office at all levels, are too obedient to the top levels, which right now are stirring up that kind of hysteria. So I want to ask you if you think it's fair to ask you about Trump, and I want to ask you if, yeah. If you think that it's out of control, do you think the rhetoric is dangerous? Is it harmful?
Well, I wouldn't choose to do it, but what I'm going to say is, and I'll answer the question.
I wouldn't choose to do it either, Joe, but I'm asking if you think it's
dangerous. I think that's, you know, so it's not that the question's unfair. It's like that with everybody, not just this guy. So I expect, first and foremost, to be judged by what I do. But clearly, on that putting Rochester first and not afraid to voice my opinion, whether they're Democrats or Republican, I'm going to go back and say, I was civil but made the request out of the Obama administration. You know, we talk about health care, poor people. Could you up the Medicaid reimbursement rate, federal rate, to us,
yeah,
like it is in some other states? That would have helped us tremendously do a lot of things. When the answer was no, I continued to pursue that and try to build a coalition to do that. It's no different to me than it is with this president. You know, so on that issue of what's happening in polarization, when we had the first shooting, I was very glad that the Senate put together a very, very logical package that would have allowed and paid for a mental health professional in every high school, which I think is a key. No rational person shoots people they don't know and now knows they're either going to be perish themselves or be incarcerated for life or be in a mental institution. Give some money to make the facilities a little bit more secure with some simple things like deadbolting doors and things like that, as well as a local option, having a security resource officer, a trained person, much like they have in the city school district. I thought that was a great response. I did not agree with the president who thought we should be arming teachers and went publicly and said that. So again, the answer is you have to do what you think is right for your constituents. I believe in a professional way, in a rational, logical way, no matter what's going on at other levels of government above or below you. And I would make this statement in all humility. Show me somebody in elected office who's stood up more to the powers to be.
But you're not
than
doing
Joe
it right
Robach.
Now. I don't get it.
Oh, but I am.
Here's what I don't get. I asked you about President Trump, and you talked about Medicaid reimbursement, and I want to talk Medicaid.
I'm talking about presidents.
I'm with you.
Because he's one president.
But is he uniquely different? Why are Republicans unable to say he's uniquely dangerous with what he's doing?
When he says something I don't agree with, I'm going to say it again.
Okay.
This is why your framework is unfair,
okay,
not your question. I'm going to stand up for what I think is best for Rochester. I'm not at that level of government. I don't think it's my job to critique him every day, nor was it President Obama, which some people did, and I said, you're not there. I want to be judged and maximize on what I could do at my level of power.
In your office and your level of government.
Exactly.
Okay.
And that's been consistent. That has not been with him. But I will say this, because I think this is relevant to the question. I'm going to say it again. When George Pataki wanted to privatize SUNY, though it was not politically advantageous to me, I fought that. I fought Sheldon Silver way ahead of the curve when Rochester was getting shortchanged on so many resources. And God knows, you know, Elliot Spitzer claimed he was going to take me out of office, and I'm still here. Because when appropriate, not political, and when I can get a result, I stand up more than anybody, even when it's not in my best political interest, or is going to make my election harder. And I've been blessed that people in Rochester respect that and acknowledge it. It is, at this point in my career, one of the few things I say that I'm very, very thankful for, because I've put a lot of time in and had a lot of stress over it, but it's the right thing to do.
All right, State Senator Joe Robach, let's talk Medicaid if we could. We had Mark Molinaro and Cheryl Donolfo on this program on Friday, and both are county executives, and of course, Mark Molinaro, the Republican candidate for governor. They both talked about Medicaid and how New York State is one of the only, if not the only, and one of two maybe, states that force part of the burden of Medicaid onto counties. And what Mark Molinaro said and what Cheryl Donolfo said was, you could cut property taxes at least 30% if New York State took back its share of that burden. Now, we're talking, I mean, I don't have the exact number. It could be $15 billion a year, could be 10, could be $20 billion a year. I want to ask you, number one, should New York State take back that burden of Medicaid ASAP?
We could certainly look at that, and we have to a small degree. So I think you know this, Evan, but maybe your listeners don't. We've capped what the county share is. So the state is picking up a bigger share. But what has happened is, and this is why it's relevant, Medicaid in New York is far, far more generous than any state in the nation. And it does good things. Not only how we take care of indigent, how we take care of people with long-term care, how we take care of handicapped people, all things that are very, very important to me personally as well as an elected official. So the percentage has gone down of what counties pay, but the aggregate dollars has not, because Medicaid continues to grow at such a large margin. So we have to really be very candid and honest, because I understand what it would do to the county budget if they didn't have to pay that percentage. But we would either have to then diminish services by that amount, which I don't believe will happen, nor would I be in favor of. Or some people have talked about taking more of the sales tax and having the state take over. So we should always talk about it and efficiencies and anything else we can. But it is a multifaceted issue, because you have to talk about funding, who funds, what we fund, who's covered, what we might not cover, or even what we might have to cover in the future, i.e., you know, our current, the amount of money we're spending on the heroin epidemic and opioid crisis. So it's hard. But I will say this. I've always been open-minded. I voted to take the state to take over a bigger percentage, because I listen to the public, and I know property tax is what people talk about the most, is the biggest burden. And I don't want to digress, but it's also, when you talked about sticking up, when you can be relevant, no matter who the governor is, I have gone toe-to-toe. Who the member of the legislature is, if they're the most powerful Democrat from New York City, I will never, as long as I live, I will do everything I can to keep the STAR program, and even more so, the senior STAR program intact. I know seniors living on $16,000 a year, their taxes would be $8,000 without the enhanced STAR program, and with it, they pay like $800, which allows them to stay in their home with dignity. And many of them are widows and widowers. I think the worst thing we could do is chase them out of their house. Yet, in New York City, where because they have a municipal income tax, you have multi-million dollar properties that pay less in property tax than you and I, they're a little insensitive to that. So you just have to look at the whole big picture, and I'll try to do that. But the Association of Counties and every county executive has made two things clear. They don't want us to cut any benefits to Medicaid, but they don't want to pay for it. We're trying to get to a good spot.
Okay. Senator Robach's opponent was on the program last week talking about health care. And your opponent, in fact, both Senator Funke and Senator Robach's opponents have favored at least some kind of a single-payer system or an expansion of a goal of universal coverage. And I want to ask you about some of the comments you made at a recent forum on healthcare. And again, I want to say I wasn't there, so I want to ask you directly about it.
Sure.
I don't know if I misheard.
We've been debating and talking about
absolutely.
It. Absolutely. Right.
So I think what I heard you say was that healthcare is actually sort of overly maligned, that it's pretty good in this state, in this country, and that we give it, you know, sort of short shrift.
I'll, can tell you exactly what I said.
Okay,
because I say the same thing everywhere.
Okay.
Unlike some people. what I said was is that I've been happy and proud to serve, and that here's where we're at New York Healthcare. We have the richest and most comprehensive Medicaid in the nation, undebatable. Bigger than Florida and Texas in total cost combined, both states bigger than us. That we have, in addition to that, Family Health Plus, Child Health Plus, the EPIC program for seniors who on a sliding pay scale get assistance with their pharmaceuticals, as well as a number of other programs, some volunteer, some government. Where the problem for New York is not with poor people. They keep saying that. It's not true. There aren't poor people that aren't insured. They actually have no copays. Amen. But that's a fact, not my opinion. The problem is more young people who are making like $30,000, and if their employer does not make it conducive for them, are choosing not to get coverage based on their income or other bills, i.e. student loans, car leases, whatever, rent. And another group of people that we've identified, rightfully so, that are folks that might be making $50,000, $55,000, but have three or four kids and are really struggling. So I first and foremost said, it makes sense to me more immediately to focus on those groups and see if we have some way to cover them. And then I did say very directly that when my Democratic colleagues say they're for New York State running healthcare, but they're not going to raise your taxes, that's untruthful. What they want to do is put the taxes on business, $140 billion, which would drive business as well as doctors, I believe, and medical professionals out of the state. So conceptually, I have no problem with a Medicaid system or a universal coverage or safety net, but that has to be done federally. And that's not Democrats or Republicans. You know, the governor has said that. Joe Morelli has said that. Rich Funke has said that. Pam Helming has said that. Joe Roebuck has said that. Because we've been talking about it. This is not new. Some people are coming along, and I think as an election ploy, are acting like this is a new concept. And I don't want to say the states because I always get them wrong, but the two states that talked about doing it, one rescinded it because it was unsustainable, and the other one now doesn't know how they're going to implement it. So I think the dialogue on healthcare and coverage is very, very important, but I think it's naive and, well, I won't say insincere, but not practical to think that you can do that without any benefits, with only benefits and no downside as to how it will be paid for, how it would impact businesses, how it would impact doctors. We already, because we truncate a little bit of payment, both through Medicaid and private sector, there's some other factors, are hearing from the medical professions that they'd like to see something different. And certainly, if your loved one or your child needs that specialist, the last thing we want to do is do anything to chase them out of New York.
All right, so real quick, when you say the richest Medicaid in the country, should we cut Medicaid? Is it too rich?
No, I don't think we should cut it. I think we should make sure that we're being as inclusive as we can and try to make sure that we're being as efficient and, you know, cost beneficial as possible. So those things like, you know, group purchasing on medicines, things like that, that makes sense. And I'm willing to even do anything else. You know, if there's a way you can make Medicaid be more efficient or control costs. You know, a few years back, all the buzzword was managed care. It helped a little bit, but we always have to be looking. And can I just say another thing too, which I think is really relevant? It's sort of a good problem because we're all going to live longer and have access to more medical technology and even, you know, pharmaceutical. You know, Narcan, even in the other category, believe me, is saving hundreds and hundreds of lives every day. I hate to use it as an example, but all those costs now, thank God those people are living, are going to be incurred. That we're living to be, the biggest growing number is 90 to 100. The money has to come somewhere, but it's going to go into the healthcare GNP. So the good side is there are going to be more jobs in that area, but we have to I think all work collaboratively and intelligently as to how we're going to pay for it. And believe me, I'm not kicking the can down the road. I would love a baseline for the federal government to go, we're going to cover every single person to this level. And then if you want to go a little bit above and beyond, then you can buy in. I would be all for that. But again, I'm not running for Congress. I'm running for the state legislature.
I'm going to try to snag a couple of phone calls before the half hour is up with State Senator Joe Robach. Joel in Brighton. Go ahead, Joel.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call,
sure.
Evan. Senator Robach, I'm outraged listening to you, to your earlier comment, your earlier answer to Evan's question about how you feel about the level of rhetoric. I think it's a total cop-out to say both sides are doing this. Your president right now, the leader of your party, is using incendiary language every chance he gets. And we're at a very perilous time in our country right now. And it's up to local politicians like you. I'm just a college professor. I'm not in a position to talk to people, your constituents and so on. You have a duty to talk to your constituents about what is
Joel.
To talk about things.
And I do.
Well, I didn't hear it just now. In your answer to Evan, you were completely dodging the issue.
I don't. Well,
that's what I heard.
I'm acutely aware that you.
I heard someone who said, "I'm powerless. I'm powerless to do anything about this." Sir, you're
I did not say I was powerless at all.
All right, Joel. I've got to let the state senator respond. Joel, thank you. Go ahead, Joe.
You know what? I don't want to say the wrong thing because I try to be very honest and I'm very open, as open, approachable, and as accessible as anybody. And I know some people really don't like the president, and they have the right to do that. But it's absolutely ridiculous when I even gave an example of how I disagreed with the president and said it publicly when it was about an issue that might have some bearing on my level of government or my life. It is just, there's a lot of politicians I disagree with. It is not my
job.
But
he's not unique to you as a politician, this president.
No, but I've seen it before. There's some people that don't like Governor Cuomo, but when I can work with him, I work with him. When I disagree, I disagree. And I don't get trying to take out of all the important issues we get, and these people are supporting my opponent, and they have the right to, because they can't outwork me, because they can't outperform me, they now want to say somehow I'm responsible for somebody else. I don't get it. I'm going to say it again. When they have said something about arming teachers, I speak up. When they say something about wanting to do something that's hurtful to New York financially, I speak up. And it's not new for me. I've done that my whole career. I think that the problem is in their assessment, because they don't like this guy so much that somehow they think I have to be as rhetorical and as attacking as everybody else. That's never been my style. I'm not afraid to disagree. And I definitely did not say I'm powerless. I've never said that in my life, nor will you ever hear that come out of my mouth. What I said is I try to maximize what I can with purpose, and I will continue to do that.
Last minute, I think what Joel and the critique is that he wants to hear you say this president is unique in our American history and is dangerous in a way that is unlike other politicians. You see him like other politicians, worthy of calling out when you disagree, otherwise not.
Yeah, because that's my job.
Okay, last question then, because we're running out of time quickly, about 40 seconds or so. Photonics in Rochester. You and a lot of people have supported this from both sides of the aisle, and it's been criticized in a lot of ways.
Correct.
You can't do it in 30 seconds, but I'm going to ask you to try to let the public know where it stands and
right.
How you feel about it.
Sure. So I have to say this first. So the Regional Economic Development Council, public-private partnerships, we now have an Eastman Business Park. We're down to 1,500 Kodak jobs, but over 5,000 jobs of other companies. Ledestri Foods, hydroponic growing, Columbia Care, medicinal marijuana, energy, battery, a lot of good things going on there. That's been a success. I would say it this way. The Regional Economic Council, more the governor, I think has been overzealous on what's happened so far, but hopefully good things are yet to come.
Okay, so you still have some optimism that we'll see more jobs there.
I'm praying. Every job lifts every boat.
Okay. And because I only got about 6 emails on it, you want to see legalized marijuana in the state? Would you vote yes or no? Recreational.
I was the first Republican to vote for medical marijuana and lead the charge working with the Breast Cancer Coalition. I'm certainly taking a look at this. But, you know, the Medical Society just came out with some cautionary notes. And so I think we should look at that, too. So my book's open still. Not afraid, but you should have some public dialogue.
State Senator Joe Robach, running for re-election. Always good, sir. Thank you for being
here. Thank
you, Evan. All right. Our thanks to Rob Braden, engineer, and Megan Mack, producer. We've got more connections coming right up here. Stay with us.